welcome to my second podcast of More Than Mortgages. Today's show will be today's real estate. I am your host, Katrina Luchasano with Silverton Mortgage, and I am delighted to have my two guests with me today. I have Allison Crawford from the Crawford Real Estate Group, Keller Williams, yep. And I have Ben Baker from Baker & Summey, my favorite law firm. So if we could, first up, Allison, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got in the business.
Okay. Well, I absolutely adore real estate. It is my favorite thing to do. By trade, I actually started off in biochemistry.
Wow.
I was a biochemist, but realized that the lab or medical life was not for me, and I really loved business. I was a little too outgoing for both of those, and so I went to medical sales.
Okay.
After medical sales, I decided to take a break and stayed home and had kids. And then when it came time, and my husband and I were in ministry for a number of years.
Oh, goodness.
When it came time to go back to work, I didn't want to do what I did before and go back in the corporate world. Mm-hmm. Well, I had helped my dad, manage real estate properties and everything over the years, so I decided to jump into that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was just the perfect fit, and I adore it. I found my sweet spot because I'm a bit of a house nerd. I like doing my own tile and electrical and plumbing and woodwork and all this stuff, and it just kind of combined everything for me, and I love working with people and problem solving. That's where the biochem comes in. People are like, yeah. How are you in biochemistry and you are in real estate now?
Right.
I said, because we get to solve problems all the time, and I love solving problems.
Oh, that's awesome. And how long has it been now that you've been a realtor?
7 years.
7 years.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
But I came in strong. My first year, I sold 18 homes.
Wow.
So
wow.
I've been hitting it ever since I started.
Right. That's awesome. So, yeah. Ben, tell us about you.
Well, I've been an attorney in Gwinnett County for 23 years this
okay.
year. I got started originally while I was in college working for law firms doing title exams, in the courthouses. Got started there and then decided to go to law school.
Okay.
And since I've been in Gwinnett County, I've been doing residential and commercial real estate closings. And my firm also specializes in estate planning and business formations.
Okay. I'm sure a lot different coming from South Georgia, right, up here when you first transitioned?
A lot more activity.
Right. Well, speaking of activity, that is our podcast today, is today's real estate. So what have you seen, Allison, in the last year to today?
Oh, gosh. This past year has been interesting. It's been ever-moving, ever-changing. When people ask me that question, I tell them it's like a combination of whitewater rafting and Chess had a baby. Because it's like it was going so fast,
yeah.
It was not going to stop. You had all kinds of obstacles to navigate through. And just like chess, you had to think several moves ahead.
Wow.
It was a very competitive environment because the market was so strong. Mm. Everybody was wanting to get in. Contracts got really complicated. People were hiding things in there. Even if you're a listing agent, it was really tough because some of the very unorthodox things that people were doing to get into a house, if you didn't know how to read the contract, understand it, could put your client in a bad position. So you need to be very proactive, whether it be, your marketing, how you presented the house, problem solving, everything. So I'm sure you saw a lot of craziness in contracts.
Yeah, we were just trying to keep everybody legal on our end. So it's the same thing with us. We've seen a lot of different types of transactions, a lot of creativity in the way things are structured. Of course, there was a lot more demand in the previous months of last year, the early months of last year, I should say. And, of course, that's dwindled some. So now we're seeing more non-traditional type situations where maybe it's a divorce where they have to sell a house.
Mm-hmm. True.
Otherwise, we see people kind of sitting back and waiting to see what's going to happen.
Right.
Before they jump in.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of when you commented about things in the contract and where to put things, because I know for us on the lending side, under the personal property disclosure, if we see where it's a value given to an item,
right.
Let's say, a couch or, in Florida, they sell homes fully furnished,
right.
The
right,
condos,
right.
But, up here, it's not usual at all.
Right.
So we have to have personal property with zero value.
Right.
have you had where you've had to explain that to people and say, well, you know, you might want to get rid of all this, but you're going to have to do a side agreement, or how does that work?
Yeah, because sometimes there have been sticky issues where there's been a very important piece that the seller wanted, and even if you put in the disclosures that it's not staying with the house, for some reason buyers get amnesia, and they want that piece, and then, you know, they just start going crazy over something that's, they're buying a house, you're not buying the things to go in it, and they can kind of lose sight of the bigger deal.
Right, right.
Yeah, we see that come up sometimes at closing.
Do
where
you?
They may have done a walkthrough right before closing and realized there was something that was taken that they thought was staying in the home.
And then for Ben, they're doing the walkthrough that morning of closing, right?
Right, so it becomes an issue at our table.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
So have you had delays ever?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They have to work it out.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, you have problems, too, when you're selling personal property and you build it into the price of the house. Mm-hmm. I don't know. How does that affect appraisal?
Correct.
Yeah.
So
right.
There's issues you have to think about when you're doing that.
Right. Right. I know, too, with, I was going to say, your expertise and the resources that you have, that how important is that in this market today?
Oh, my gosh. More important than ever. Mm. You know, I always tell people when they're hiring me, you're not just hiring me for your transaction, but the 200 plus transactions I've done before you.
Mm.
It's
okay.
All the experiences, all the craziness, and things I've just acquired through seeing a lot. And I'm sure just like you've seen a lot over the years.
Right.
I mean, anytime you're working with people, you think you thought of everything until they come up with something
There's
new.
There's always something new. You're just like, I thought I'd seen it all.
Right, right.
You're like, nope. I mean, it's... Yeah.
What's the most recent thing you've seen, Ben?
Oh, gosh. Probably when it comes, well, the most recent thing that was an issue was a couple in a divorce, and they had sold the house, and then it becomes a power struggle between trying to negotiate the price.
Mm.
And, you know, the agents are caught in the middle. We get caught in the middle because we're trying to interpret the settlement agreement.
Yeah,
to make sure that, that all the parties are being paid, you know, what they're supposed to be paid. But then it gets to where maybe one of the spouses is more active in the negotiation of the contract than the other one.
Okay.
And they may give up some concessions that the other one wouldn't have agreed to. And so it just ends up being a stalemate in some cases. And when it comes down to it, somebody's forced to give in because you've got a buyer who's ready to buy, you know, and you can't just walk away from that. So,
well, Allison, have you had?
And I was going to say, actually, to tag along with that, being an agent in situations like that, that's where my 15 years of ministry experience comes.
That's what I was going to say.
Negotiation tactics.
Oh, completely, because it's a very vulnerable and sensitive time, and you have to be able to talk with people, understand what's most important to them, and create a win-win, because at the end of the day, they have to sign all that paperwork out of free will.
Right.
And so it takes a lot of very skilled understanding negotiation to get them to that point. Mm-hmm. I've had times where I've sat in my car for 3 hours on the phone with one spouse who did not want to sign and have a conversation because the closing was the next day, and sweet talking, and we closed and everything was fine. But I've definitely had some very lengthy conversations helping to bring people together in those situations.
Which leads into the next question I would have, and on your problem solving, how important is that? And one thing I would be curious about is, have either of you had a divorce situation or a buyer and seller where you had to put them in separate rooms at the closing? And tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you kick off first?
One that comes to mind is a situation where there were certain repairs that were to be made, and this happens a lot, where the repairs were to be made prior to the walkthrough, prior to the closing, and the buyers go in for their walkthrough, and the repairs have not been made or not been made up to, you know, the standard that they expected.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it ends up being contentious, both sides of the table, you know, going back and forth. They don't want to buy it. You know, they've said they've done all the repairs they're going to do.
Wow.
So you have to get to a point where you can sort of negotiate. And I've had, well, we're going to hold back funds from the seller.
Okay.
You know, that's one thing we do until these repairs are made to the satisfaction of the buyer. to resolve it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to think about, you know, how am I going to resolve this and get this to close?
Good. Yeah, you're right, because you're who we're all looking for advice on. And like you said, what can you do legally to keep this moving?
So that one in particular, we were able to get it to close.
So what would happen if they didn't close? You know, when you give this earnest money, are still doing that where they're keeping your earnest money for what's it used to be due performance?
Due diligence.
Yeah.
So if, you know, during the due diligence period, they decide they don't want the property for whatever reasons, inspection or whatever, they have the right in the contract to walk away and get their earnest money back. But if you get past that due diligence period and then there's some situation where the seller doesn't perform according to the contract, then that earnest money may be up for grabs, you know, to be given back to the purchaser.
Right. So I was going to say, Allison, with the due diligence, I remember last year lenders or agents asking me, okay, how many days of due diligence? Zero? What is that like now, today, on the due diligence?
We're starting to get back to 7 to 10 days due diligence.
Okay.
You know, which is more
normal. Right.
Yeah, because for me, gold standard was always 10 days.
Right.
And so to see a 3-day due diligence or 2-day was almost unheard of. And it really put things into a frenzy because houses are like people. None of them are perfect.
Right.
And so when you go through an inspection, you're going to find something, you know. And
what is that inspection like, that inspection period? Because I have where I'll receive a contract literally from the agent who's already copied the closing attorney. The closing attorney opens the file that same day, and then 2 days later, 3 days later, after we've ordered everything, we'll say, oh, sorry, you know, they're exercising their due diligence and we're terminating the contract.
Yeah.
So what is the inspection seems to be the number one reason. So what are...
Not always, because it was so competitive last spring. People were putting several offers out.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't think you were allowed to do that.
Seeing which one they got and picking their favorite.
Oh.
And just because an agent comes in hot doesn't mean that they are going to stay with the deal. So as a listing agent, because I kind of focus on listings, so a lot of times I'm sweating out, you know, vetting out the buyers, their motivation, their financing. I'm making a lot of calls because once a seller goes under contract, they can't back out, but the buyer can. So my job is to
create. That doesn't seem fair.
So, especially because sometimes you find out you're handcuffed to the devil once you go under contract.
Right.
Wow.
But,
right.
Problem solving once again.
Yes.
But, and so I always try to vet everything out as much as I can on the front end to have a smooth contract all the way through to then. But even so, things can come up. Speaking of problem solving, I have a really interesting story to share with you guys. I had this couple that came to me to list their house, and you know, they were close to retirement, had been playing all their cards right, you had so much money in savings, their current house was just about paid off, just super strong, ideal clients. And so I was doing the listing side. They were moving up to the mountains quite a ways away. So they had a different buyer's agent and a lender that they were working with up in the mountains. Well, I got their listing under contract. But I'm a big communicator. I'm always, you know, I want to know any other agents I'm working with, any lenders that I'm working with, because we all need to win for this deal. You know, teamwork, I think, is everything.
Yep.
And so... Anyhow, I had a rock-solid buyer. I mean, just a dream buyer for his house. Everything was great. I mean, it was probably 2 weeks before we were supposed to close. They had their clear to close, and everything was going along great. Well, I got a frantic call from who was my seller and on the house that he was buying. And this is why I appreciate what you do, Katrina, because you guys do the automated underwriting on the front end.
Yes.
And so that's why I use you, because with complete confidence, I can say, you know, this loan is going to go through.
Yes.
And I feel really good about it. Now you're going to do whatever it takes to for that loan to go through. Mm-hmm. Well, anyhow, we were about a week out on the closing of the listing, and I get a frantic call. And the underwriter from the mountain house that they were buying at the last minute decided that he did not want to use the husband's income because he was going to be working remotely up in the mountains.
Oh, goodness.
And even though they had gone all the way through the process, and he said, well, actually, the sale is now contingent on the sale of your house. And this gets dropped in his lap just right before closing.
Oh, goodness.
And so he called me up freaking out. And I was like, oh, no, this house is going to close, let me tell you. And so I, you know, called up the buyer, you know, his buyer's agent and the listing agent of their transaction and the lender. And I told him, I said, I've got a rock solid deal here. This house will close that he is in. You know, I sent over the contract, talked to them. I said, my people are already clear to close, had the clear to close acknowledgement from their lender. And then I also, because since the buyer was clear to close, negotiated where they'd move up their closing a few days.
Okay.
And then because of that, I mean, I was, and my cell service was terrible that day. So my neighbors probably thought I was a crazy person because I was pacing back in my front yard for about 5 hours. But I definitely, I've got the whatever it takes attitude. I'm like, I treat it like it's my own house. So I'm like, no, this, because if that deal fell apart, it would cost him in the tens of thousands. He'd lose all of his earnest money. At that point, you know, he'd be paying multiple commissions. It would have been really, really bad, and he would have come up with nothing.
Yeah.
And so I was just determined to take care of them. And so, like I said, after all those conversations, you know, we got it to work out. He closed on his mountain house and had a lovely closing on his house in Lawrenceville. And I saw him about, you know, a few months ago. He's like, oh, my gosh, I love living in the mountains.
Oh,
and,
great.
And the house that he bought up in the mountains was a fairly expensive one, but that was before all this craziness. So it's just about doubled, and you can't even buy mountain property now. So he is so thankful that that whole deal stayed together. Worked great for him.
Right. That's awesome. That's awesome.
So it's more than just showing houses.
Right.
You know, when you're a real estate agent, you've got to really work hard.
So, Ben, how many, when you see all of these deals come across, and I know you also do commercial, so how are you seeing, I guess, just this the first quarter taking off here? I know we're still into February, very early, but what are you seeing?
We're on par for where we were this time last year as far as files being opened.
Okay.
So, you know, we're expecting just a sort of a normal type year. You know, we're not going to have all these extra outside factors that we did in the last couple of years with the market, like COVID.
Right.
And then, you know, I think that as long as there's a demand and it's still, you know, a seller's market.
Right.
More so in some locations than others. But I think that I'm expecting it to be, you know, like last year.
Right.
Yeah. I don't expect a big dip or anything like that.
Yeah, you're seeing the same thing?
Yeah, because I found, you know, last spring there were so many heartbroken buyers that no matter how many offers they put in, they could not get houses.
Right, right.
And now since the market is balancing out, those people are like, oh my gosh, I can actually get a house now.
Right.
You know, in the fall when the interest rates were so high, that was kind of like going, you know, 90 down I-85 and somebody put the handbrake on, the market just kind of came to a screeching halt. But now that everybody's kind of gotten over the shock and they've kind of started balancing the rates a little bit, you know, it's just a good calm feeling. You know, like Ben said, everything's just kind of settling, coming back to normal, just normal. A good pace.
I feel like we're back into 2018-19, you know, a normal market. 2020 everybody wanted to refi to capture that low interest rate. And then 21 was just nuts of the purchase market.
Yeah.
And it was just so hard to keep up with. And like you said, I felt so bad. How many times can you tell somebody, well, if it's meant to be? And you're thinking, you know, that house might have been meant to be for them, but they just...
I think all the pent-up demand during COVID is what led to that surge last year or in 2021. Yeah. But we won't see that again.
That was historic.
Do you think that, I know it, with the Feds doing another increase to the Fed fund rate, the short-term rate, and just to, for our audience, basically when the Fed Reserve increases that short-term rate, it should lower the long-term rate because the idea to increase it is to slow the economy down.
Right.
It still seems to be, though, that we're seeing it still in the grocery store, at the gas pump.
Yeah.
And I just think we're going back to, because everybody sat around during COVID. I know last year I was fortunate to be able to go to England and Scotland, and it was packed, you know, and everybody you saw, were they couldn't travel in 20 and 21, so they were traveling last year.
Yeah.
And I think that this year people will not be doing as much traveling.
Right.
The cruises. So hopefully these Fed fund increases will start to bring our fixed rate down so that more people can get into the market.
Yeah, if we could get them down a point, I think that would make a big difference. I don't see them going back down into the fours, but if they could settle out in the fives somewhere, I think that would have a psychological impact on the borrowers.
Yeah. Totally. And one thing I will say that has helped the buyers out is now sellers are giving concessions. Yes. They're making repairs. They're, you know, providing closing costs. They're negotiating on price. Where, I mean, last spring, unless you walked in with a suitcase full of cash and threw it up on the table, you could just kiss it goodbye.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so even though the rates are higher in some ways, this can be a better deal for a buyer because they're not paying, you know, $50,000 over list with no appraisal and paying all your closing costs. And, you know, it's just a lot more settled for them.
Yeah, I think the buyers in this market or the market that we will see this year, we're going to have, it's going to be more of a solid purchase.
Yeah.
It's not going to be based on, you know, a little inflation.
Yeah. I had a comment from an iBuyer, well, not from the iBuyer, but an agent who has a listing, and she was approached by an iBuyer, the Open Door Offer Pad, to Mark Spain, you know, to purchase the home. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked at how much less they were offering.
Oh,
because last year I saw where I was like, wow, they're offering pretty close to list price. And this year they're back to offering thousands less. So I wonder if that, you know, if they predict that the market, or let's hope that they're not doing that purposely on our market, right? Because I know some of us, I remember, Allison, we talked about that a couple of years ago. We felt like the iBuyers were pushing the market up higher.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they're pushing it down.
Yeah. Well, they were, it was because they were lessening inventory.
Right.
Anytime you got scarcity, you end up paying more.
Right.
Yeah. And so, but I mean, they took such a bath on being aggressive with their purchases that I think they're going to, they have to be a lot more conservative now.
Right. I wonder if they ever buy new construction. Do you ever see that?
I've seen like corporate buyers come in and buy blocks of new homes for rental purposes, for investment purposes.
Mm-hmm. I have a purchaser on the south side who a year ago they went into, it was a new construction development.
Yeah.
And they pretty much rented to all these buyers with an option to purchase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it has been crickets trying to get information from this owner. It's a fund.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of what is the final sales price? How is that $13,000 option going to be applied?
Right.
You
right.
know, on their option to purchase deposit.
Yeah.
It's scary because we've been going on now. We've talked for about 6 weeks, I guess.
Oh, wow.
And they have until the end of March. And I hope that they don't drag their feet and now these poor people lose their money.
Yeah.
You know, I am concerned about that.
Mm-hmm. There's a risk there.
Yeah.
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 Well, because they're also not as emotionally invested in a home.
Right. Yes, you're right. Yes.
You know, and a home is a very emotional purpose. It's where we live our lives. You've got your memories and your Christmases. You know, when a buyer walks in, they get attached to a house. They're trying to, you know, see what their life would look like in that house.
Right.
You know, and for when you're working with an iBuyer, it's just cold hard cash at the end of the day.
Yep.
That's what
people like that
be.
Message, though, right? Sometimes. I mean, you know, I hear it on the radio. You know, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to put your dog away, you know, just
for a price.
Right,
for
exactly.
A cost,
you're absolutely
a hidden cost.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, essentially, they're flipping a house. So there's a profit margin that they need
in order
to stay profitable. It's a business.
So how do you handle that when you're talking to clients for that listing appointment or for that listing? Because I'm sure that once they think about it and everybody's already been contacting them, how do you talk to them that no, this is the price difference, and how do you work with them to assist them through that? I'll help you make it easy.
Yeah. Well, me being a science girl, you know, I'm very numbers driven.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually lay out in front of them, you know, the difference between what they would get, you know, utilizing a traditional agent versus going with a group. like an iBuyer, and they can see the difference. And I really go above and beyond for creative solutions and to make sure that they've got a smooth transaction. And ironically, even though a real estate commission can be a cost, that is actually the least expensive and most profitable way for a seller to sell. Because I've had listings that I've taken on where I'm getting that seller so much more money, I end up paying for my own commission.
Okay.
I did actually.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's worth it. You
that's
know,
right.
This is your most valuable asset. You want a trusted person that's either going to make you money or save you money. So,
right.
So I had actually a listing like that this past fall. It was essentially a divorce situation. It was a couple, their boyfriend, girlfriend, that bought a house together. They were both on deed and things went sideways. I'm sure you see that too, Ben. That's always fun.
Yep.
And so even though you're technically not in a divorce, there's a lot of similar elements. And so anyhow, you know, they had, you know, all the different iBuyers approaching them. Oh, we'll get you this. We'll get you that. And I ended up doing their transaction for them. She had a lot of health issues, so she was on disability. So I actually had her because I'm really good with my pricing and staging. So my houses are usually on market, you know, 7 days or less.
Wow.
And so I told her, I said, look, you go out of town for the weekend, I'll have your house sold when you get back. And I just totally stitched it up. And they ended up making $35,000 more than what that iBuyer offered them. And actually, as the market was going down, the iBuyers kept on offering less and less and less because they can take away because they don't want to lose their shirts.
Right.
And so they ended up making a lot more money going with me.
I see. Yeah. Are you seeing?
So you have to know your client situation too, your seller situation. Are there, is there sort of a panic or a desperation to sell the property quick?
Right.
And you kind of have to talk them off the ledge and let them see the big picture that, you know, we can still sell it quick if we do it right, and you're going to make more money than going with these iBuyers.
You know, a thought just came to me, too. What about your neighbors, right? If you sell to an iBuyer at a lower price, and you've been, you know, that neighborhood for 20 years, I mean, I wouldn't want to see those friends in the grocery store again, or I'd have to remove them from Facebook, right?
Yeah.
You're not doing them any favors.
No, you're not.
At all.
Yeah.
Well, and you still have to look at the iBuyer contracts closely because some of them end up charging a 10.5% commission.
Okay.
Instead of
so
a traditional
I didn't know that. I was going to ask you, Ben, what are you seeing on that closing disclosure?
Yeah, you see the fee structure, commission structure is always different with those contracts. We don't close a lot of them, but when we do see them, they're different than your standard Georgia real estate contract.
Also, Ben, so I remember last year I had a seller was, it was open door, but they had just moved from one LLC to another, and it was awful trying to get the updated warranty deeds and title.
Yeah.
So is that, have you, what... How is the recording process? How long does that take? So if it is an iBuyer,
now
when can they flip it?
If they're e-recording, you know, they record the document the day of closing.
Oh, okay.
Which they would have to, you know, to satisfy, you know, their process to be able to turn around and sell it, you know, to another buyer quickly. So used to, it could take, you know, several weeks to get the recorded documents back.
So they could sell on a Monday and then turn around and list it on that Tuesday?
If they get a recorded document back.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
And not only that, with some of the addendums that they put in there, they may say that, you know, this whole deal is contingent upon HOA bylaws and conditions. And I actually had a client where it was about 11 hours before close, and she had moved out. They're like, oh, we don't like the HOA laws in the neighborhood. And there was nothing to keep them in there.
Wow. Yeah. So that's a very interesting point, because with the HOA and most neighborhoods, I didn't realize even in single family PUDs, planned urban development, that they could still restrict you on renting the property. So if it's an iBuyer, then as a homeowner, that could to me be a red flag that, well, what if they can't sell it?
Well, and there were rental properties in that neighborhood. So there were rentals in there, and it was well within it. But, you know, that's, like I said, it's, there were some things in their contract that unfortunately that
they're very creative. They're creative with it.
Yeah. Can you imagine? That's
they're
what
all,
they have,
those
right?
contracts are geared for them to get out quick.
Exactly.
Of the contract.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we are almost at the end of our time. My goodness, time has flown, right? We have you guys are so, so knowledgeable. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So appreciate it. And Allison, you know, we've worked together for a few years now. Love our relationship. Thank you for your trust. And Ben, we've worked together for as long as our kids are age.
22 years.
Exactly. And I love our friendship and relationship that I can just, anytime I need anything, you are both so responsive. I appreciate that within like same day.
Yeah.
Is that kind of your model too?
Yes.
Yeah. Totally.
Yes.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. So if somebody wants to get a hold of you, Allison, what's the best way, or what is your information, cell phone and email?
Okay. Cell phone, text is usually best.
Okay.
If I'm on an appointment, I can call you right away after that. Cell phone is 678-360-4202. That's 678-360-4202. And our website is crawford-realestate.com. Crawford-realestate.com.
Okay, and I think I've just even like Googled the Crawford Real Estate Team, Keller Williams, and I can find you.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Ben?
Yeah, you can reach me at 678-464-2762. That's 678-464-2762. My email is ben@basattorneys.com. ben@basattorneys.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again so much. This has been great, and let's just have a wonderful 2023.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.